I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, it's a rainy Thursday morning, and it will be throughout today and tomorrow and into Saturday morning, but then it turns nice. Got a big hour planned for you. We're going to talk about the recall effort first overall with Pearson Cross, a professor of political science at ULM, and then with Noble Bates Young, a volunteer with Family First St. Tammany, running the recall efforts against Christopher Tape, the coroner. And you know, everybody was just all nuts about this guy, nobody running unopposed. And then they found out what happened in New Mexico. And our next guest, his colleague, David Hammer, unveiling a lot of revealing a lot of stuff about this guy. And everybody was all in an uproar. But now it seems as though the effort may have cooled a little bit, which goes to how difficult it is to recall official in Louisiana, which is why we talked to Pearson Cross. But before we do any of that, we're joined by our friend Ramon Antonio Vargas, editor and reporter at The Guardian. Good morning, Ramon. How are you?
Good morning. I am well. How are you?
I'm okay. I got to start, as I always do, by thanking you and David Hammer and Mike Pearlstein. And I know over at Channel 4, it's Katie Moore and the other, and so many other. Julie O'Donoghue, I don't know where to start here with investigative reporters and the things that you guys covered. Because if not for you, we don't know about any of these things. And I do thank you for your work, and I mean that sincerely.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Let's talk about Lawrence Hecker. What's going on with him? And for people that don't know, because there have been so many, not only delays with Lawrence Hecker, but so many problems with priests in the Archdiocese of New Orleans. Give me some context and the backstory here, if you would, Ramon, before we talk about what's going on.
Sure. I'll try to be concise as possible. If you guys may remember, in 2018, the Archdiocese of New Orleans published a list of credibly of clergymen who were confronted with substantial allegations of child molestation. Lawrence Hecker was one of the new names on that list. Years later, come to find out that he had confessed to his church superiors in 1899 to either sexually molesting or harassing several children that he met through his work.
Let me slow you down just for 1 second. I want to have established a little bit of a timeline here. This was what year?
This was in 1999.
And the church documents revealed, correct?
Yes. And these are church documents that we obtained that were not, you know, publicly released. These were ones that we worked very hard to obtain.
And in these documents, he
confessed to sexually molesting or harassing several children, and basically nothing happened to him. Until in 2022, an accuser whom he had not confessed to, came forward, made a police report against him, accusing him of having raped him at St. John Vianney, at the church that was attached to St. John Vianney, which is now a school that's closed. And we were able to report obtain the confession to report it. David Hammer and I were able to confront him at his house about, whether he stood by the confession, if he had anything to say about it. He stood by it, and then he was indicted in September of 2023. Since then, he's 92, right, at this point, which is where not doing anything to him back in the 90s when he was much younger and, could have led to a trial. Since he was indicted, we've been wondering, is he going to go to trial? His defense has long maintained that he is too old to go to trial now, too frail. He is, mentally incompetent. A couple of days ago, this medical report that we've been waiting for was filed in court, in which he was officially diagnosed with dementia. And now we're basically waiting to see whether that is enough for him to be declared mentally incompetent to go to a trial.
So back in 1999, he tells his superiors at the church that he sexually molested several kids, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And the church does what?
I mean, basically nothing. You know, they sent him away to a treatment center that diagnosed him as a pedophile. They said did something that he was never going to be cured for, that he could only manage. He returns and he was put back to work. I mean, he was put back to work at a church that had a school attached to it in St. Charles Parish. And basically, he was allowed to retire in 2002 without being named, without the public ever being informed. And this was in 2002 after the clergy abuse scandal in Boston, which a lot of people associate with the movie Spotlight, hit a fever pitch. They kind of pull him out of ministry. They quietly retire him. And he was allowed to fully collect benefits until the Archdiocese filed for bankruptcy in 2020, and then some of his benefits were canceled, but he's still collecting some. I think that the biggest consequence so far for, you know, conduct that he has acknowledged having carried out, the biggest consequence is that he was charged in September. He's been, you know, he was arrested. He's not really been free. I mean, he's not been in jail necessarily that entire time. He's in a long-term medical care facility right now. He had previously been in kind of like a more acute setting at a hospital, but like he hasn't necessarily been kind of like free, but he's also not in, I guess, the, you know, what people call OPP colloquially. I guess it's the Orleans Justice Center now, which is the jail.
So if the church had just simply done as most people would do, if, for example, a Fortune 500 company had an employee that came forward and said, you know, I sexually molested four kids and admitted to it and called the police, chances are this guy would have been in prison since 1999 or thereabouts. Accurate?
Well, yeah. I mean, like, here's a fact, right? 2018, when they finally acknowledge in 2018 that he is credibly accused of having molested children, right? And never mind that in 2018, like, he's confessed to this, right? They make no distinction between these are just a bunch of accusations or like this is something that he's admitted to. When that happens, right, there's more people come forward, and including one that ends up obtaining criminal charges against him, right? So I guess like it is not unreasonable to say that like if that disclosure had been made in 1999, if that disclosure had been made even, you know, and again, keep in mind, 1999 is the absolute latest, but you're talking about how in those documents you see how he had kind of been dogged by these allegations as far back as the 70s and the 80s.
To that one second, because I think that is an important part, because this goes back to like 1975, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, exactly. And then I keep in mind that in this case of pending against him, you know, the victim alleges that he reported being raped by Hecker to his principal, who was on that 2018 list as well. This is this guy named Paul Calamari. And
he reported it when? In 1975?
After it happened. And what he describes is that they paid him money to get therapy, but never reported it to the police, right? So I guess that, like, when it comes out that, like, hey, like, we think Lawrence Hecker, this priest, is a child molester, chances are that more people come forward back then and people can take action. Now, with action, yes, like charges were filed in September of 2023, but at that point, he's in his early 90s. And right now, he has a diagnosis of dementia, and that is something that, like, you can wait as long as you want, but that does not get better, right? It only gets worse. So I think that unfortunately, I think for a lot of people who have been waiting for, you know, victims to have their day in court against Hecker, you know, that seems like a far possibility at the moment with him being diagnosed. And I think that, you know, we've seen certainly in other cases that especially in the context of abusive clergymen or allegedly abusive clergymen, that a dementia diagnosis often results in, you know, mental incompetence, at least for now, and then just the justice being delayed, if ever delivered.
So they're playing a long game, obviously. That's what the defense is up to. Jason Williams has said on record is saying that he's malingering, that there's nothing wrong with him. Jason Williams is not a psychiatrist, I realize that, but he is a seasoned prosecutor. When it comes to the latest, Ramon, just so I understand, where does it stand now?
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, you know, the records make clear that he has dementia. It's not, you know, like it's like mild to moderate dementia, you know, that we've kind of seen that described. We've seen him, you know, we've certainly seen in court in records that he can remember things from a long time ago, but his dementia means that he has some days where he can't remember. He you know, his short-term memory really suffers, and that could affect his ability to assist his attorneys, according to the psychiatrists who evaluated him. And obviously being able to assist your attorneys is one of the criteria to be mentally competent for trial. And so right now we are waiting. So right now he has a dementia diagnosis. Right now we have an medical opinion that he may be on bad days. He won't be able to effectively assist his counsel, which is a requirement to be constitutionally tried. The judge has not adopted those findings, right? So we're all waiting to see what Judge Benedict Willard at Orleans Parish Criminal District Court does regarding whether he adopts those findings and then finds them. But that's exactly what's frustrating is that, like, you know, the judge hasn't come out and said that he's mentally incompetent. The psychiatrist herself hasn't explicitly said that he's mentally incompetent to stand trial. So right now it's just who's going to make that call. There's a September 24 trial date. I would characterize that as a very, very tentative date. So we're all just kind of waiting to get a final answer. If I can add one last thing, in the lurch, obviously, you have a victim who, you know, we've publicly reported is not living in Louisiana anymore, who right now we're less than 3 weeks from that trial date and is like, am I going to have to fly down and testify about this? Am I, like, you know, there's people waiting to make tribal arrangements to come testify. There's people making, so obviously there's a sense of urgency, but we're just waiting to see who's going to make a difficult decision to say, you know what, that trial date is off because he's mentally incompetent to stand trial, or we're waiting to see if it's like, you know what, it's not enough for that for him to be found mentally incompetent. We're proceeding to a trial. So it's continued. It's a very prolonged waiting game, and you know, we're still kind of in that same posture.
So the things that he admitted to the church on record and that the church had in its records in 1999, people are texting in, and I think it's a fair question that they don't understand the proceedings and the maneuverings and so forth. Why isn't that in and of itself enough legally to lock him up? Because he's confessed to it, right?
I mean, that's, you know, it's interesting because, you know, the note has people's names in it, right? The note has people's names in it. I am not a prosecutor. I am not an investigator.
But to be clear, when you say note, Ramon, I just want to make it clear to people. When you say note, what he confessed to, what he admitted to, correct?
Was in writing, yes. In writing. And so that confession, that written confession, right, had people's names, identifying information. I'm not a police officer. I'm not a prosecutor. It took me about 5 minutes to find the first person named in there to ask him about it, and for that person to be like, "Well, you're the first person who's ever called me about this this disclosure," and I've reported that, right? And it's like, you're the first person to call me. I had no idea that he admitted to it. Yes, it's true. You know, just like Hecker said, it was true. You know, the minutia of like, okay, like if fondling someone's genitals, is that something that you can prosecute 50 years later? You know, what kind of forensic evidence are about that? You know, I don't know. Some of the allegations, you know, to be upfront, right? Like some of the allegations I think that are in there, I think anyone acknowledges that there may be some statute of limitations, which is why it was so devastating to not disclose, hey, like we've got, you know, to not disclose it in real time, right? Because all this time passes and then some of these, you know, there's filing deadlines that kick into effect. I mean, that said, that note is in there that you could call people. I'd be curious to see if this case proceeded toward trial. What makes this case different from those is that this case involves, you know, aggravated rape, right, which has no statute of limitations. Some of the acts described in that fall short of that, which do have statute of limitation. So I think that's like a key difference. That said, I'd be curious to see how many people in that note mentioned may show up at this trial to testify if that moves forward. But again, everyone's just kind of waiting and seeing, like, are we going to have a trial on the 24th of September or not?
Real quick, where does the state police investigation stand as far as you know? And when it comes to the fact that you were able to look at these things that you had to sue, I get, right, to find out the confession? That's how you found this out?
No, we did not have standing to sue, according to the court. Just through reporting, I was able to obtain them. So right now, the state, obviously, there is a broader investigation, and the Archdiocese stands accused of allegedly facilitating this sort of like child sex trafficking and, covering up decades old child sexual abuse. There was a search warrant that was very publicly served on the organization in April. Massive amounts of records, as you can imagine, when you're talking about decades worth of those records. And literally in the bankruptcy, there's hundreds of clergymen and lay staffers and, nuns and brothers accused of abuse. So it's a lot of those, from what I understand. My best interpretation of what's going on right now is those are still being analyzed. Those are still being just kind of like reviewed and still kind of going through the material. And as of now, nothing's been taken off the table. No one's been charged. That's clear. But that doesn't mean it's going to stay like that. It's a very lengthy process. And when it comes to those crimes that I'm talking about that have no statute of limitations, those are the ones that are obviously being prioritized. But because there's no statute of limitations, it's not like there's like a 2-year deadline, 5-year deadline where something had happened. So, let's just buckle up, and it's going to take years of tracking. It's exhausting. I'm sure people are tired of hearing me come on here and talk about stuff.
I'm not tired of having you, and that's why I always have you ask you to recap it. And it's not that we're rehashing the same old thing. It's that nothing's changing is what it is.
Right.
And Ramon, I would also... go ahead.
But it's also like what's happened is Goche in the 80s, right? The spotlight era, 2002, even 2018, right? There's like this idea of the reporters get exhausted of just kind of staying on it. People get tired of hearing about it. But I think that's what has allowed, people just assume, I was one of the people that saw spotlight and was like, wow, that must all be over, having no idea that, that it was very far from that. So, it would have been very easy for everyone to walk away, and maybe that investigation that state police undertake, doesn't happen if there's just not this constant drip of media reports. But there's a lot of survivors out there whose stories have not been told. And I would not expect this to go away. And I would expect this to, we're measuring what's left in years, not necessarily weeks or months.
I don't want you to say anything, I know you can't, but I presume you're working on some things right now that we'll probably find out in the future, not too soon.
Yeah, there's a lot left.
Not absolutely too far away, let me put it that way. Relatively soon,
correct,
we'll find out about it. Thank you, Ramon.
Correct.
Appreciate your work, man.
Thank you.
All right. And look, I'm a lifelong Catholic, but this for a Fortune 500 company to act this way would be reprehensible for an archdiocese and a religion. Come on. 9:27, we'll take a break, come back, talk to Pearson Cross about recalls on WWL.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.